What's up? July 31st, 2020. Beefs. Talk about flight school a little bit. And the Marine Corps version and options. In order to get there, I'm just going to explain the process of actually getting into flight school. You need a college degree, or you have to be on your way to having a college degree, mostly. If you're enlisted, and then you go to an OSO, he decides whether or not you can, you got to pass the, you know, physicals and all that jazz to get into OCS. We're gonna, at least in my, the actual minimum PFT is like, I think it was like 3 pull-ups, 50 sit-ups, 26-minute 3-mile. At my OSO, you had a 24-minute 3-mile, 80 sit-ups, and 10 pull-ups. By the time I left, I think it was at 1,821-something 3-mile. 5K. Anyway, go to OCS. It's like boot camp. It's called Officer Candidate School. Very similar boot camp. According to the prior enlisted guys that had done both, it's mentally easier and physically tougher. I think maybe the mentally easier part is because you've already done it once. It's not as hazy, meaning they don't have... There's so much official hazing that there's not a lot of just messing with you time. Whereas for Marine Boot Camp and Navy OCS, there's a lot of that. Anyway, then you go to this thing, TBS, called the Basic School. It's basic Marine stuff. You become what they call a Provisional Rifle Platoon Commander. Some basic tactics. You learn how to use the most, like, 90% of the most commonly used Marine Corps weapons and tools, including, like, some people got lucky. They got to ride around in tanks, and it was, like, you know, pretty cool in that aspect. You do a little bit of hand-to-hand fighting and a bunch of, like, it's fork and knife, literally. There's a whole course and dining out where you... It was probably the fanciest dinner I've ever eaten in my life. Then you learn like law and administrative crap and a bunch of classroom tactics, how to write orders, da-da-da. Moving on, when you leave TBS, because I'm not going into detail there because it's not what I'm trying to talk about, just getting you there. So now you've that's 6 months long, OCS, so 26 weeks, and OCS is 10 weeks. So you're like at 36 weeks in the Marine Corps. You have a few options. You can, and as an aviation contract, you can actually try to go to IOC first. Or you can just take, basically, I took 21 days of leave. And that was the norm. They did tell you, and then you start flight school based on the order you graduated out of the flight people. And for me, that was pretty high. I was 88 out of 360. Overall, and I was like, I don't know. I was slated to start in January. And the first guys were slated to start like in late November. It's harsh. I don't remember. I was somewhere near the relative top of this particular class. And then you go to... So you show up down there, and there's this whole MATSIG 21, which is somewhere that you hang out. And that's why I got a cell phone, because the guy was like, hey, dude, you can either get a cell phone and call in every day, or you can show up for a muster at, it was like 7 or 8 in the morning. That moment, I went and got a cell phone, came back, gave my number, was out. They don't really, this is an overall thing at Navy Marine Corps Flight School. They are not on top of you. You are. On your own, you can ask for help, but and you'll get it, but you're on your own. They're just like, we give you all the rope to hang yourself. We got to see. It's partly, I think, just the way the Navy Marine Corps is. You think about the Navy versus the Army or Air Force. Air Force, tightly controlled. And the Navy, as it used to be, you sent a ship captain out on a mission. That was that. He was gone. You better hope he's going to do the right thing. So that's the mentality. The mentality is, we're going to get you to a place where we know you're going to do the right thing. When no one's looking, you're in charge. I think it's very effective. Whereas the Air Force, the Army much a much more traditional ability to have control back in the day before, you know, you could send an email to an aircraft carrier. You know, think about it. Even in the time of, like, the First World War, the Second World War, you got out of radio contact pretty quick. Radios don't go that far, man. Not naval terms. Like, that fleet sails, Admiral Halsey's gone, he's gone. FDR can't pick up the phone like they can today and call him up. So it's just a different mentality, very much like, hey, you do the right thing, you do you. So you get down there and you hang out. I was hanging out, and I think that they were going to assign me a job as a gate guard. But I knew someone that worked at this, like, lead program. They were like, hey, we need people. This is volunteer only. Why don't you come work with us? And it was basically twofold. You have a bunch of officers sitting around doing nothing. You have a bunch of Marines sitting around doing nothing. Because it's a Navy school, the priority goes to actually foreign students first. So the way that these classes work is they look how many spots they have, and the foreign kids and the Air Force guys, and I think the Coast Guard. No, Coast Guard's part of Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, one aviation world. Think of it that way. The Air Force and foreign kids get to go first because they're actually literally paying full tuition. You're going to school, like, for free. Imagine high school where you just go, and then there's foreign kid comes and he's got to pay rate. So he kind of gets to go first because of that. So you wait as a Marine, and the Marines are, like, last. So you end up having to wait a little bit longer, and the Navy guys, you're more experienced than them. You've been around longer. You get promoted before they do. So there's a lot of, like, Marine Corps first lieutenants and almost no student lieutenant JGs. Anyhow. And, you know, this lead program, I taught math for Marines. We did a few other, we did, like, a paintball battle. We did a couple of other things, like a hike. We did some cultural stuff, you know, like, all right, we're going to go on this nature trail. And we did martial arts. So it's a tan belt is the first level of Marine Corps martial arts, and a gray belt is the second level. I got my gray belt, and I was hoping to start green belt, but then I got asked to start earlier than anticipated. So that was that. So anyway, this was a basic, like, not even 9 to 5. It was more like, I think we showed up at 07 for the lead program, which is annoying, but usually we were done at noon because then martial arts training started. And once they started the new class, it was like noon to 3 for martial arts. And then you're done. And you didn't, like, when you weren't, everybody came in every day. But a lot of times we kind of hang out in this back office a little bit, and then we're off doing our thing. So, and then you get into API. API, Aviation Preflight Indoctrination. A bunch of academic stuff. Weather. Basic, like, aviation terms, which is, like, you know, how air, you know, runways are sort of numbered and all this. You did a lot of aerodynamics. That was probably the hardest part. And it's not that the stuff's so hard. It's like at a low grade level. Like, you know, it's like a high school level course. It's just that you do it so fast. You have one or two classes exam. I remember graduate school was tough on some people because instead of having 3 classes over the whole semester, you had 3 classes, but one was a month, another was a month, and another was a month. Like, you already had your grade halfway through their semester. You've already finished half your classes. You have grades in. It's kind of weird. So this is similar that way. You couldn't go below 80%. I was the number one graduate Marine. Woohoo. Whatever that means, it actually had a significant impact, which I saw as negative, which the Marine Corps saw as positive. You also do a lot of swim and survival training. So you get to wade in the water when a helicopter comes, and you hook in this little hook. They pull you out like a foot out of the water. You learn how to shoot flares. You take these like survival classes. You do a lot of work in the pool, you know, walk, crawl, run. So you start in a bathing suit and you end up in full gear where they like turn off the lights, they spray you with cold water with a fire hose. you can kind of see where I'm going here with that. Then you run like a couple of different PFTs. Oh, one thing. Before you go to API, you have to run a PFT to make sure that you didn't laze out. And that's all great, except that it's normally the courses would be 2.8 to 3.2 miles, because it has to be, it can't be like a loop, and it can't be a straight line. It has to be you run halfway one direction and halfway back. Why? Because you could make it all uphill or you can make it all downhill. So in order to avoid that, they made it so there wouldn't have to be exact. This is back in the day. They changed it to like, no. It's got to, because everybody was running 2.8 miles, which I don't see a problem in. Anyway, this one was 3.2 on purpose. And it was also done where you essentially had a headwind the whole way. How is it possible? Because it was like the way the wind came off the, it was right on the water. It was very picked. It was like actually a very pretty run, but it was difficult. There's no wind breaks, like no buildings or trees. And you were getting this offshore wind in the morning, you know, blasting you the whole time. It was unpleasant. Anyway, then you do a mile swim. And every day they made you work out every, I think it was like in the middle of the day, just to get you to add to the stress level. And it is fast and furious. I remember I've never spent so much time studying. I became Asian for 6 weeks. And then the last test seemed like it was going to be super easy. Me and all my buddies from that API class had planned a trip to Panama Beach. I kind of like saw past the opponent and got a 79%. I got one problem too many wrong and had to retake the test on a Monday because my grades were so good. They didn't make me do all this remedial crap. The guy just explained to me what I got wrong. And he's like, all you got to do is do everything you did on these questions the other way around. He's like, just reverse your thought. So it was like, what I got wrong was like, a runway is named after its direction. So for runways pointing north, 360 degrees, it's called runway 36. I'd got it backwards. So if it said 36, I thought it meant it pointed south, whatever. But that was the only exam I got. I think I had like 100, 100, 98, 99, 100, and 79. I was still the number one Marine graduate. We had a bunch of flight surgeons, i.e. medical students, who obviously, like, one guy didn't make a single mistake. And so I was kind of miffed because I would have been hired, not that it matters. And because I was the number one Marine graduate, I got a cookie. My cookie was I got to start flight school right away. Everybody else had to wait anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. In a normal person's world where they're just like gung-ho, get it done, da-da-da, that's awesome. For me, I was just always looking for, like, the way out. Like, I hated it. I started hating it in TBS, and once I get this bad attitude, I had a great attitude till the first, like, 4 months, and then the bad attitude came out, and it never went back because I was being a little B. And everyone wants free vacation time. I didn't care. Like, what's 4 weeks? For real. To this day, I'm like, at 25, I was like, oh, I'm going to get to play golf. And instead, it was like, you're starting right away. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Turns out, you know what, though? It's cool because, you know, in retrospect, maybe it is cool because then you don't sit there just worried and you're just sort of hanging out and you're like, fuck, these stupid jobs. And I just got to go on. And then you got primary. So in primary training, I ended up being a helicopter pilot, but everybody learns on, I think it's called a T6 now, it was a T-34 when I was there. It's a turboprop, meaning it's got a turbine engine like a jet engine, but it just spins a propeller. Why would you do that? Well, there's a lot of performance reasons for it. It's safer. It's easier to fly. All right? And it's easier to fly than a reciprocating engine. It's the easiest plane in the world to fly. This plane was designed for stability. If you think about like a fighter plane, that thing is designed for maneuverability. There are trade-offs. There's no pharmaceutical free ride. There's no aerodynamic free ride. If you want a plane to be highly maneuverable, it's going to be unstable. Just like, oh, you got a big plane? Well, a big plane is going to have these issues. And a little plane is going to have these. It can't carry as much, but it's smaller. You get the idea here. So this thing's made for stability. It's like a boat. It literally like a float in the air. I mean, obviously it needs propulsion. Like if you let go, it'll right itself. Aerodynamically, it's designed to like... Now, if you... There's something called trim, which is you put your controls in a certain manner. It can't overcome massive incompetence, but it'll overcome small, fleeting errors. It smells... It's hot. It smells bad in there. I went during the summer. I started in API in like late February, early March. Well, if it's 6 weeks, February. I was in flight school on April 6th in primary. And it was hot. On my first solo, I brought like a quart of water with me in the plane. And in the hour and a half I stayed in that plane, I finished it. The AC, like I remember just climbing to our ceiling was 10,000 feet. I climbed to 10,000 feet because for every like 1,000 feet of altitude, you lose like 2 degrees of temperature. So I went from 110 to like 90 something. It's actually more than that. It's called an adiabatic lapse rate. But I think the it actually gets way cooler. And the ACs on these planes could get you 10, 20, let's call it 20 degrees. So when you're at 110 degrees at 1,000 feet, right, you're getting down to, it's 90 in the plane. And you're wearing a lot of gear. You got a flight suit. You got thick boots on. You got a helmet. You got a parachute that's actually strapped to the seat. Or did you have to carry it out? I don't remember. But you got this like survival gear with like a, you know, water actuated flotation device with like a breathe, you know, like this cylinder with oxygen and everything. And you more or less hot. It's hot. I was hoping to do all flight school in one sitting, but I don't think I'm able to do it. So you go in there, and before the flight, you have this, like, basically take an exam. There's a bunch of written exams. You then do a bunch of flights, pass, fail, and different. If you can fail any flight twice without any consequences, and then it gets really, like, iffy here, because if the instructor decides you suck, then you can get in trouble. But if he decides you're trying really hard and you really, your heart, I was always seen as the guy that has heart in it, even though I didn't. I absolutely hated it. I got airsick to the point where I threw up for the first 7 flights and then was nauseous. Probably, I would say that maybe there's like up until my solo. So 48 hours, so roughly about 24 flights or so, I was nauseous. There's various phases. So there's like what's called FAM, which is you're just learning to fly the plane. Like you learn to fly a plane. You go through that, you have a check ride, which is funny because I broke the record at 21 wave offs. We almost ran out of fuel. On my first solo, I almost ran out of fuel because I forgot I was on a time limit. I had a full tank of gas and I used every drop. In fact, I remember I was up there and I'm tooling around and like I got it to fly as fast as it would at maximum continuous power, straight and level. Then I went into a dive to get it to its maximum airspeed, which is like, I think it was 280 knots or 320 miles an hour. And then I just flew around, you know, I did my bounces. You have to go and practice landing by yourself. you do five. And once you do five, the guy that's in the sort of mini tower at these individual bases, landing sites, wants you to leave, and they're like, you don't do more than five. Five's the minimum. There isn't a written maximum, but it's an unwritten maximum. So I just went ahead and like, okay, I guess that's it. But now that took like half hour. So, you know, flying out there, but tooling around a little bit, flying over there. It's a great feeling being up there by yourself, man. I mean, you're just free. But that moment, there's not much you can do. But within that realm of what you can do anything. And you're up there and you feel great. It is unbelievably good feeling. I did it. And then, of course, I came back. Like, man, you were gone for a long time. And I was like, did I have a time limit? They're like, no, but nobody does this. Like, my entire Marine Corps career that I got, nobody ever does this. It goes all the way back to high school. Nobody ever does this. Like, why are you weird? I don't know, man. Sometimes I'm weird on purpose because I thought when I was younger, I thought it was cool to be weird. And I still do a little bit. But really, like, a lot of the things in the Marine Corps, I just did what, like, I thought was the right thing at the right moment. And it didn't always, like, let's say, coincide with, what do I want to say? The common perception. Or common way. Let's go ahead and make this a multi-parter. And I really wanted to do like a really quick... I was just so trying to be concise. It's hard, man. Try to hit that 22 minutes. It's like hard. All right, cool. This is like part one. We're going to go ahead and stop at... just did my solo. Or that's what you do in general. I'm not really telling my story, sort of how it is. So tune in next time for the next one. Love you. Bye.